వసుదేవసుతం దేవం కంసజానూరమర్దనం దేవకీ పరమానందం కృష్ణం వందే జగద్గురుం గురుర్బ్రహ్మా గురుర్విష్ణు గురుర్దేవో మహేశ్వర గురుస్సాక్షాత్ పరబ్రహ్మ తస్మై శ్రీ గురవే నమః. ఓం సహనావవతు సహనౌ భునక్తు సహ వీర్యం కరవావహై తేజస్వినావధీతమస్తు మా విద్విషావహై. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. లివింగ్ ఇన్ ది ప్రెసెంట్ ఈస్ అన్ ఆర్ట్. Can I learn it? Perhaps I can learn it. I can learn this art. Just as I have learned all other arts, maybe I can also learn the art of living. And living means living in the present. One cannot live in the past and one cannot live in the future. The past is gone and the future is unborn. So living means living in the present. To live is a very delicate art. I would like you to forget for the present that I come from India, or sort of we are discussing something Indian, an Indian scripture or Indian viewpoint. Take the simple word, live, the English word live. It's a very interesting thing. Even to live, you have to turn completely away from evil, isn't it? Spell it out. L-I-V-E represents a complete turning away from evil, isn't it? It's English, not I'm not talking to you in Sanskrit. Only when you turn completely away from evil is there living at all. Otherwise there is no live. We shall discuss later what this evil means. Or we may dispose of it. By saying that the definition of evil is also contained in those four letters. The definition of what evil is also contained in those very four letters. Jumble it up. V-E-I-L. Anything that veils yourself, your innermost self. Anything that prevents you from looking within yourself, observing yourself, that is evil, that's all. That means a lot more than the conventional definitions of evil. The conventional definitions of evil being, what I do, however wicked it may be, is right. What you do, if it doesn't agree with my tradition, is wrong, isn't it? That is the normal, conventional idea of evil. I think we discussed this here a few days ago. An Indian Swami or a Catholic priest falling in love with somebody is evil. A Protestant priest, an Anglican, even Archbishop of Canterbury, falling in love with somebody is quite sensible, it's no harm. He can get married. And for a Jewish rabbi not to be married at all is evil. If a Jewish rabbi is not married, he has violated the first commandment of God. Not the first of the Ten Commandments, first most commandment, go forth and multiply. So what is evil? evil according to social conventions is that which doesn't accord with my tradition. The way this gentleman is seated is in perfect accord with Indian tradition. When one goes into a temple, etc., one sits like this. And if my grandfather saw someone sitting like this, he'll spank him. I don't know, I really don't know why. Examine, I'm not joking. Exactly this. I have been teased and scolded out of my wits just for sitting like this sometimes. I don't know why. Many of the superstitions I can explain, but this I cannot explain. So I didn't ask him to change his position. It just because it doesn't suit my tradition. It's different. So, what is evil? Is there something which is evil apart from what you and I consider to be evil? Yes, and that is the veil. Any thought, word or deed which prevents us from seeing ourselves as we are is evil. That veil itself is evil. If you go on playing with these words, you will get a lot of good information. You know where evil leads you to? Hell. Huh? And you know what hell is? Nothing but shell, only the S has been dropped out. It is a sort of shell. You live in an enclosed sphere. So anyone who lives in that sort of enclosed sphere, limited sphere, frog in the well policy, he is already living in hell. He may be in the best of positions, Beverly Hills. But that doesn't alter the fact that he or she is in hell if you live in an enclosed atmosphere psychologically. You feel that I am the only one who is, all the others are damned. He is already in hell. I am the only one who is going to be transported to heaven, all the others are going to hell. That attitude itself is hell. So evil is something which veils me from myself. Right? If I turn completely away from this evil, then I begin to live. But since the veil has been lifted partially, the veil has been thinned out partially, it has become transparent, as it were, I am able to see through the veil, it's still there, I am able to see through the veil and discover something shattering, and that is that in this word live, there is this eternal mischief maker. There is this eternal mischief maker. Until I deal with that mischief maker, I can't possibly console myself, pat myself on the back, saying, I have conquered evil. I have not conquered evil till I have laid the ghost that produces these evils. And what is that? Ah, lovely. Otherwise, in live, that is the ghost. That is a fundamental mischief maker. Otherwise, it will come up. In connection with that, they say a little story in India. There was a great king. King in India in those days meant big farmers in the United States. Anyone who had a big ranch, a couple of thousands of acres, he would be considered a king, Raja. in India. But probably your ranchers don't have that arrogance of having a ministry, a cabinet. Those kings used to have. He had his prime minister, he had his so-and-so minister, his so-and-so minister. After all, a farmer, a big farmer. And he also used to hold court. And in those days again, since most of these kings were also fairly religious, they used to have evening satsangs like this, get together. That's the background. Except for the satsang or something like that, the kings were never sober, they were always drunk. Money, too much of money, you don't know what to do. When you have too much of money, you don't know what to do, and this money creates its own problems which you want to drown again in alcohol. That's something, it's a peculiar thing. One doesn't understand it quite well. And there was a very clever minister who used to tease this man almost every day. Your Majesty, you are a fool. And this sort of thing, you know. I mean, you wouldn't call him a fool. But then pointing out to the king that every one of his orders and instructions was wrong is as good as saying you are a fool. And this king got so terribly cross with his minister. But then what to do? The minister says it's wrong, you have to change it, change it. Now one day, they assembled for the satsang in the evening. There was no electricity in those days. And the king had a big fat cat, royal cat, you see, so it had to be fat. It came, it used to come and sit next to him. That was his pet. And have you seen what is known as the hurricane lantern? The kerosene or paraffin fed, it used to be carried in the hand. Have you seen them? Something like a lantern which burns on paraffin. And the king himself used to come with one of them. That was the greatest luxury in those days. Electricity was not invented then. And the cat sat next to him. The king took that lantern and put it on top of it. With a broad back, it could hold the lantern very easily. And the cat was sitting there, quiet, absolutely innocent. I don't know if you have seen a cat sit in such situations. It sits there and occasionally opens his eyes just a little bit here and there. Looking for something. Looking for something. Okay, just half open the eyes and close it again. Like. He put the lantern on top of the cat, looked at his minister and said, look at my cat, how obedient it is. You are a minister, you are not even as obedient to me as my cat is. He scolded him. And the minister said, sorry, Your Majesty, I quite realize that your cat is far superior to me. Wonderful. The satsang went on. In the meantime, the minister excused himself for a few minutes, then came back. The satsang was still in progress, he came back. And he wanted to blow his nose. So he took his handkerchief from his pocket. Something fell out of that handkerchief. And then, in the twinkling of an eye, the cat was gone. The obedient cat was completely out of sight. The lantern was shattered to pieces. Everything was pandemonium in the hall. What happened? That minister had brought a rat, a small little mouse in his handkerchief, and let it right in front of that cat. So, very often we think we are completely free from evil. pat ourselves on the back. We went to the yoga camp, you know. Everything is all right, perfect. I've been completely transformed. My nose was between my eyes before I went to the camp, and my nose is now on the top of my head now. Some transformation has taken place. You know what transformation means? This is what transformation means. Before you went to the camp, your nose was in front of your face. Now when you come back, the nose is behind your back. That means transformation. Transatlantic means one side of the Atlantic to the other side of the Atlantic. Everything seems to be fine, wonderful. That is the greatest part of the mischief. The greatest part of the mischief is everything seems to be perfect and wonderful. Till the rat comes along. Till the rat comes along. So, what is the thing that in us that is tempted by the rat? The I. In order to live, I must turn away from evil. And in order effectively to turn away from evil, I must drop this I, which is the root of all evil. Supposing you drop that I from this word, live, what happens? You can't even pronounce that word, can you? So you still need a vowel. One more vowel. E is there already, but it's more or less silent. This E in live is as good as non-existent. So you need a vowel. And you look amongst the vowels to see which one can replace the I perfectly. In other words, which is completely contrary to the I. The complete antithesis, opposite of I. I has got a beginning and an end. I must find something which has no beginning and no end. I looks I from one side and probably from the other side also. If I does head stand, it will still be I. But when you look at it from the other side, it becomes a flat line. Meaningless. So, I want a vowel which will be the same from all angles, which doesn't change. I look around. I has got a value, isn't it? The letter I has got a value, 1, isn't it? When it is considered a digit, a number, it's got a value, 1. And I want something which has no value. A digit which has no value. So, a complete opposite of all that I stands for. And so I look round for another vowel, and the vowel is O. O is something. Probably you had, you see, after writing O, you try to figure out, yes, there must have been a beginning somewhere. Everyone who started writing O must have started somewhere. But then, you can't discover the beginning or the end. It's something which goes on and on and on and on and on and on. And this O, from whichever angle you look, it's still O. It's zero. And it is something which has no, which doesn't clamor for value. O is something which does not clamor for value. You put that, as a matter of fact, it is then that you begin to live. Also, you understand something very significant here, that till we have done all this, we can't love. We are not loving. I don't say we can't love, meaning that, all marriages must be broken and etc. etc. We are not really loving, till we have done all these, till we have turned away from evil, till we have torn this veil apart, till we have dropped this I altogether and reduced ourselves to nothing. Till we have dropped this I altogether and reduced ourselves to nothing. It's only when you reduce yourself to nothing and do not claim a value for yourself, it's only then love manifests itself. Love is not a thing which can be acquired. I doubt very much whether it can even be cultivated as such. People do say that one can cultivate love by, for instance, you begin to love. We ourselves say so very often, by love your father, mother, love your husband and wife, love your etc., your society, your community, and your nationality, and then all human beings and all living beings, etc. I don't know if that works. Probably it does, very good, if it does. But love is something which manifests itself spontaneously in your heart when these things are done. When you turn away from evil, that evil being the veil that prevents you from looking within, and then you look within, when you look within, the evil also becomes clear, visible. People struggle with their own inner evils, which according to them are so terrible that they can't get rid of them, only because they don't look within. Not analyzing themselves. Analyzing yourself is waste of time. What does one do when one analyzes oneself? I quarrel with him. I broke his nose. Now, when I sit and analyze myself, I am trying to ask myself, why did I do that? And immediately there is an answer. He has called me a fool. And so, I had to prove that I am a fool, so I hit him. the simplest way of proving that he was right. He called me a fool, I don't want to call him a fool, so I hit him. Or, if, for instance, I had quarreled with a friend without provocation, is another strange phenomenon in modern society. If I had quarreled with him, he is my friend, if I had quarreled with him for no apparent reason at all, then psychology comes along and says that something happened in your mother spanked you or your father spanked you when you were a baby, and so you are rejecting a father image. You are seeing a father image in this man, and so hit him. What is the snag in this? The snag here is that you don't want to accept responsibility for it. It's always somebody else. He provoked me and so I hit him. Or my father or mother or somebody, something happened and so I hit him. Our own great-great-grandmothers in Indian villages also used to say, if I quarrel with him, he is my friend, if I fought him, she would say, no, my grandson is a very nice chap, but then some sort of a devil, spirit, evil spirit entered into him and made him fight. It's about the same thing. What my great-grandmother said, calling it spirit, the psychologist says, calling it father image. The result is still same. Disastrous. Because all these things prevent me from seeing my own responsibility here. This is one of the greatest pronouncements of the Bhagavad Gita. Uddhare dātmano ātmānam, nātmānam avasādiyet, ātmaiva hyātmano banduhu, ātmaiva rupurātmanaham. Uplift yourself by your own self. Don't look to somebody else to do this. You have to uplift yourself by your own self. This is a very clear pronunciation. Atmaiva hyatmano banduhu, atmaiva rupuratmanaha. You are your own friend and you are your own enemy. Don't look for an enemy outside yourself. There is none. And nor do you have a friend outside yourself. There is none. How is it possible that I can be my friend and I can be my enemy? Bandhuratmaatmanastasya yenatmevatmanajitah anatmanastu shatrutve vartetatmaiva shatruvat. You are your own friend when you are self-controlled. Don't jump to any conclusions now. We are not discussing now what this self-control means. When you are self-controlled, you are your own friend. When you have no idea at all of what you are, that is, you are unable to look within, you are unable to see within, you can't observe yourself, then you are your enemy. Because when you are non-observant, it is then that this devil has its wildest play. Therefore, we are not interested in analysis here at all. The I cannot be analyzed, even when it comes to self-knowledge or Atma-jnana. The technique that they give us is self-inquiry, not analysis. Analysis will lead you nowhere. Analysis can only lead to self-condemnation or self-justification. I quarrel with him. If I analyze why I did so, either I justify my action, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, or if I am somehow convinced that I was wrong in quarreling with him, supposing I don't blame him, I don't blame my ancestors, I don't blame my ghost, I don't blame my parents, then I say, oh, what a silly fool I was. I'm going to sit down and cry. Please remember, when you cry a lot, take some water. Because the only thing that you really lose while crying is water. You don't lose your ego there. The ego is not gone. You can cry for 150 years. Still the ego will not go. Only a little bit of water will be lost, you can replace it. So, I either justify myself or pity myself, condemn myself. I still don't know myself. Therefore, analysis is of no use. Even the psychoanalysis, it's of no use. You can go there. When, I don't know if you were all born at that time. When was the psychoanalysis introduced? Analytical psychology. You know, this, even these film stars used to be psychoanalyzed every few months. You remember that? Probably none of you was born at that time. Do you remember that, sir? A few years ago, about 20, 25 years ago, I think, 20 years ago. We read in the Indian newspapers that psychoanalysis was the thing to correct all sorts of personality defects. And therefore, anyone who was suffering from tension or nervousness or maladjustment in society and in family and so on went to one of the psychoanalysts. And I remember having read that these film stars used to go, because they were the maddest, I suppose. They used to go to these psychoanalysts. Alright, I went to a psychoanalyst. and I have been cleared completely, okay, then I must remain so. But we were told at that time that these film stars used to go back to the psychoanalyst every 6 months. What for? That means the thing is still there. Please don't try this on your friends. There is one simple way of curing a toothache. You know what it is? Huh?
Pulling the tooth.
No. That's of course. I mean, you can without doing that. Twist the arm and make a fracture. Yeah. Make such a terrible pain somewhere else in the body that the man and the toothache seems to be almost unimportant. So, the torture of lying on a psychoanalyst's couch and then paying his bills must have made the film star feel all right for some time. She doesn't want to go back immediately. That doesn't solve the problem. Analysis. It is self-knowledge we need. I must know myself as I am. And no one can know me as I am except me. Only I can know. You cannot know. By trying to know me, by trying to analyze me, you are committing a mistake. You may be projecting yourself upon me. A great doctor of psychology came to the ashram once. And she said, I can analyze everybody including you. I replied to her, I am quite prepared to agree. This is in the case of all these sciences, astrology, palmistry. As sciences, they may be perfect. But the astrologer is still a human being. The palmist is still a human being. So, a human being is subject to error. And I told her, you are also a human being. Psychology may be a perfect science, but you are a human being. This perfect science is flowing through you, polluted by you. How am I sure that you are completely free of all neuroses and of all psychosis, etc., 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 and that you are qualified to analyze me? Clear? Huh? Why should I submit myself to your analysis? You are telling me that my problem is because I am projecting my father image upon this man. I agree, it's possible. But then when you come and look at me and try to analyze me, you may be projecting your own father image on me and try to condemn me. What for? I don't know, I don't agree with that. So the only person that can really know me is myself. And that self-knowledge is what we are looking for. That self-knowledge makes me my own friend. That self-knowledge lays this ghost of evil and also the root of all evil within me. The root being I, the ego, the false ego. When that is gone, love manifests itself. These steps are inevitable, whether you call them steps or whether you call them whatever you like. Turning away from evil, tearing of the veil, dropping of the ego, and dropping of the ego, these are inevitable steps to love. When these have taken place, love comes into being. Only when these have taken place will one know what love is. And to live, and therefore live in the eternal present, is to be in love. Where we are not wedded either to a dead past or to an unborn, unknown future. We live in the eternal present, and therefore as love. We shall have a few minutes meditation, and then, if you like, we'll ask question time. त्र्यंबकं यजामहे सुगंधिं दृष्टिवर्धनं पूर्वारुकविभवन्धनान् मृत्योर्मुक्षेयमान्तान् ॐ त्र्यंबकं यजामहे सुगंधिं दृष्टिवर्धनं पूर्वारुकविभवन्धनान् मृत्योर्मुक्षेयमान्तान् ॐ त्र्यंबकं यजामहे सुगंधिं दृष्टिवर्धनं पूर्वारुकविभवन्धनान् मृत्योर्मुक्षेयमान्तान् सर्वेषां स्वस्ति भवतु सर्वेषां शान्तिर्भवतु सर्वेषां पूर्णं भवतु सर्वेषां मङ्गलं भवतु सर्वे भवन्तु सुखिनः सर्वे सन्तु रम्याः सर्वे भद्राणि पश्यन्तु मा कश्चित् दुःखवाग्भवेत् असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मामृतं गमय ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति
हरि ओम तत्सत्।